Welcome to the Progressive Technology Hour. I'm Michael Alijan with the Vortex Network, and I also have a show after Progressive Technology, the Cosmic Connection. But I'm here today with our host, Bill Alec, who is going to be discussing some very interesting topics, some about his background and also some research he's been involved in. How are you doing, Bill?
Hello, Michael. I'm doing fine.
Great, great. And I went to your website. It looked very interesting. That's Intellek, intalek.com for our listeners who want to check out your website. Very interesting. It's called Exploring Gravitational and Inertia, Mass Fluctuations, Radiant Energy, and Temporal Anomalies. That's quite a mouthful.
Yes, it is, Michael.
So tell me a little bit about yourself,
study.
Bill.
Go ahead.
I just said, let the audience know a little bit about your background and how you came up with some of your findings and conclusions.
Yes, I'll give you a little background about myself.
Okay.
I'm a degreed electrical engineer, and I currently do software consulting work for major corporations. Huh? Now, that describes my day job.
Right.
At night, I become Dr. Houdini.
Now, you moonlight as Dr. Houdini,
Yes. A researcher, explorer, experimenter in the world of exotic technologies.
How did you come up with the title Dr. Houdini? Did you have an interest or fascination on the magician Houdini?
Well, I loved the 60s TV show Doctor Who.
Oh, you know, yes, Doctor Who,
time
yes.
Time travel.
The Time Lord, right.
Oh, yes. And also the magician Houdini.
Right.
And so I, a few years back, I just came up with this combination, Houdini.
That's very fascinating.
And since my work involved time, doing time research, studying the nature of time, I just thought it was appropriate borrowing Doctor Who and Harry Houdini.
Right, and since we all like to have more time on this planet, more time is always great. Of course, I always say we have all the time in the universe, but on planet Earth, it has seemed sometimes to be kind of limited. Haven't you noticed?
Oh, yes. Yes, time seems to be quickening.
Right, and of course, they say if we're enjoying ourselves, for some reason, it seems to fly by a lot faster. But if we're really hating or not liking experience, it seems to go by so slow. That's just an illusion, imagination, or what do you think it is?
Well, it could very well be a physical effect. And, you know, I've been studying time.
Right.
You know, what is it? And I've started investigating time. When I heard about an author, Nick, I believe his name is Nicholas Nelson, exploring the gravitational mystery spots. You know, a strange phenomena that occurs on the planet. And there's a couple of these that have been discovered, the Oregon Vortex and the Santa Cruz Mystery Spot. So I first heard about this phenomena from Nick Nelson. I think it was back in 2000.
We're talking about vortexes and stuff?
Yes, yes, it was on the Coast to Coast show.
Oh, yes.
And he described some really strange phenomena that occurs within the vortex. And I was simply blown away by it, and I said, well, you know, someday I'm going to have to investigate this, research it.
Right. Now, are you familiar with the, have you been up to Sedona?
Well, just visiting Sedona, I checked out some of their websites.
Right.
There are some energy vortexes there.
Right. In fact, I just wanted to mention that I was the first person officially to open my mouth and talk about 1981, the Sedona vortexes. And next thing I know, Graham, busloads of people were showing up, and then they started tours. I never really marketed it properly, I guess, but it was something I kind of made, opened up and told everybody in Phoenix. Next thing you know, I went all over the world and sent. So I was kind of the person who created that whole Sedona Vortex, you know, I guess almost a cult following of people going there because they began to recognize. And I hear Aurora, because the Healthy Habits Hour, she had met, we had both met people in the government who claimed that they said that when they would fly over Sedona, it was the one place in the world that they would pick up on their infrared scans and stuff, this huge vortex of energy coming out of the Sedona area. Kind of interesting.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this phenomena, I observed it at the Santa Cruz. I studied it quite a bit. I've taken several trips out there.
Uh-huh.
I also developed instrumentation that measures the phenomena.
Oh, interesting. What did you...
And the conclusion that I came to, okay, the conclusion that I came to is that I think there's, according to the data, there's a mini black hole that maybe fell from space, hit the Earth, and is buried in the ground. A mini black hole.
In that Santa Cruz area?
Yes.
How far underground would you estimate?
That could be the same phenomena that maybe hit Sedona and maybe hit Oregon area with the Oregon vortex.
I see.
Because according to my calculations, and I developed the physics and the math for this, is that with this kind of curvature, that when you enter the phenomena, there's a curvature of space-time that occurs.
Right.
And you're only about 50 feet away from this phenomena.
Underground, you're talking about?
Yes, yes, sir.
So if we were to dig down, would we actually penetrate into that, you know, black hole, as you're putting it?
That could very well occur. That could happen.
Is this like similar to a wormhole in any way? Or different?
Well, black holes have been, the theory behind black holes has been around for quite some time. But the, you know, how big are they? Well, they can range in size from, you know, millions of suns all the way down to perhaps an electron. An electron could be a very tiny miniature black hole.
Very interesting. So they can, you know, size and size, but they're usually round, or does it vary in size?
What they're spinning, a spinning black hole, I believe they have what they call something similar to like an accretion disk. I mean, they flatten out. And if we look at some of the physics of of this time traveler by the name of John Teeter, he gave us some physics there, some reference to some physics papers,
right,
of two mini black holes. And how they distort space and time, and how we may utilize this for time travel.
Are you familiar with the Philadelphia Experiment in Montauk?
I've heard about it.
One of my friends is Al Bielek, who actually, at least as of a couple of years ago, he was still alive. He was the last survivor of Project Invisibility, Project Rainbow, as it was called. I could do a whole show on that. And the movie that you can actually rent at Blockbuster is about 70% accurate, according to Al, who had firsthand experience of what he claims going through a time-space hyper bubble and from 43 to 83. Interesting experience, story, and then how they created, Dr. John von Neumann was involved in the Montauk experiment.
And Tesla? I think Tesla was involved.
Yeah, and Einstein was also. And for different aspects related to the unified field theory and some other things, and Tesla was involved in it initially, but he dropped out because morally he was opposed to the fact that they were not going to protect the crew from the electromagnetic fields that he said were the byproduct of this experiment. And they did a cover by creating another. They were supposedly, according to Al, two USS Eldridges, and the cover was a magnetic galvanizing experiment that was going on at the same time in the Philadelphia Naval Shipping Yard. And it's all an interesting story. It's like very fascinating. But anyway, I just wondered if you'd heard about that in Montauk and some of the experiments. I've found a lot of guys who claim they were connected with Montauk through the years. I can't prove it, but there's something way they would describe it. Very similar, the same story of different people didn't know any other would describe the same thing about the physical effects and things that they were. Anyway, interesting story.
Yeah, I know Tim Ventura of American Anti-Gravity interviewed Al Bielek.
Right.
And he has some interesting interviews on his website.
And then there's the Montauk trilogy of a series of Duncan Cameron, I think, was one of them, and a couple others who were involved in it or knew about the experiment. And when I went out to Montauk a few years ago, and actually in 2003 was kind of significant because according to every 20 and 40 years, according to Al Bielek, there's this thing called related to what is called time-space reference points in our brain that if we try to move outside of a certain thing that our brain is situated with, we experience weird phenomena. So he said something to do with the magnetic field of the Earth, August 12, 1943 and 1983, something about that date related to the field of the Earth. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but it allowed them to more easily to travel through time, he claimed, and that particular date or a few days related to that than other times because something to do with the field of the Earth was resonating. I don't know. I don't know all the details, but I know he said it had something to do. And in 2003, when I was there, they said there's something was going on in Montauk, and I was there in the Montauk town that at the old military base, this guy who was a realtor told me one night he was out in that area and saw weird stuff, lights, there were huge trucks that had drive there, and they were doing something at the base. It's been supposedly shut down for years. And it was a lot of weird like monkey business going on that he never really elaborated, and it was strange. They never saw things like that that particular night. Something was going on there that they thought was a little bizarre. Anyway, you know, a lot of urban legend, I guess, to it, too. But I think there's some truth that our government has been able to, with their black op-type programs, develop some kind of technology relative to it. But anyway, so you, so that was that would have been. It's always interesting hearing about that kind of stuff. So, so
I think the closest experimenter that I know of, that maybe replicating some of the Philadelphia experiment would have to be John Hutchison. And his rotating magnetic fields. Using these Tesla coils. Is what John did. He set up an array of these Tesla coils, and he would properly sequence these coils such that they would induce a virtual current flow. And by placing certain types of metals, he can induce a virtual current flow in a metal and cold melt the metal.
Wow. Cold and meaning
he also
no heat. So
did some levitation and some temporal experiments. Now materials would just suddenly vanish, into the ether.
Did it come back?
Yeah.
And when you say...
At some time later, but some things just never came back. I mean,
oh, some things never came back.
Time traveling.
So it's somewhere out there that's still traveling around, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
Somewhere, I mean, if it disappeared from this time, space, or whatever, you'd think it'd be somewhere, wouldn't you?
That's right.
It has to be somewhere.
I mean, all that time is it's... The research that I've done in this field is that time travel, it's primarily a function of traveling through complex or imaginary space. You know, that there are these higher dimensions, and that we represent those higher dimensions as imaginary numbers.
Now, when you said earlier about cold, I think you used the word cold heating or cold, I mean cold melting, meaning that it was melted without any heat?
Well, the idea of what Hutchison was doing is that he would set up what he referred to, going back to Tom Bearden, you know, these scalar fields.
Right.
Okay. And this is a series of experiments that I want to do. I have a link on my website of implementing Tesla's wireless power transmission.
Like in Colorado Springs.
What Tesla was doing is transmitting power through the air.
Right. I have all a copy of his entire notes at Colorado Springs.
Well, what John did is that he set up a ring of these Tesla coils.
How many coils are we talking about?
I think we're looking at maybe three or four.
Oh, okay.
Coils. And it was written up in Electric Spacecraft Journal, you know, some years back. But anyway, John set up these coils. And if you have ever seen this guy's apartment, he did all this in an apartment. It just, it's astounding. I mean, it just,
his whole apartment is like a workshop.
All this equipment.
So it's like a laboratory kind of place.
Yeah, but it's like a laboratory on steroids, you know?
On steroids.
I mean, it's just incredible. You crawl into this thing. It's like you're crawling into all this technology. This guy's apartment. and he set up this, you know, he's got this array of Tesla coils, and he's got all of his equipment running that sequences Tesla coils. Well, the idea is that you induce the scalar fields of virtual current flow, okay, by cycling or sequencing these coils. Okay, you can induce a virtual scalar current flow through metals. And when they do that, you can essentially cold melt metals.
They actually melt?
Okay. Yes.
But there's no heat?
Well, there's no heat involved.
Oh. Now, what kind of metal are we talking about?
To melt a metal, like aluminum, you know, you're looking at, 900 degrees C or something, begins to melt aluminum. But when John is running his apparatus, inducing a current flow in this metal, okay, it doesn't get hot at all.
Wow.
And the metal has a consistency of like a jello.
Well, that's interesting.
He actually took pictures of this.
Well, you know, when the Philadelphia experiment happened, according to Al Bielek, some of the side effects was that the hull of the USS Eldridge, the ship that experienced it, actually started to kind of, he described it as kind of melting, kind of like, you know, altering molecularly, and you could put your arm through it. Now, the horrendous thing about the experiment was when the guys came back, these 30-some-odd crew members, most of them went insane from the experience because they were not prepared for all the electromagnetic fields that were the byproduct, and he had to go back. He describes destroy the generator because it started creating a hyperspace bubble. But he said when they came back, the horror of the whole thing was some of the guys' arms were caught in the hull because it changed. You know, it's like the density of it changed, and there was like it would glow green and other colors, and they had spontaneous combustion stuff, and they were wearing metal on their body. It would shoot off this. And anyway, it was interesting because there was a show on TV a few years ago. I think it was a government mind control thing to see if we see something and we feel in our gut that it's true, and then they say, no, it wasn't. Will we believe what we feel in our gut, you know, a certain essence of knowing, or will we believe? And it actually showed these images in the beginning of the show that I had a reaction to, like, wow, these aren't special effects. This is real. And they never referred to the images and all. And at the end of the show, there were different people mentioned, like CIA this and CIA that, and they tried to explain the whole experience away, even though they showed these images that were so realistic, they hit you in the gut. Like, and I think, I feel those were real images, but they were not referring to them at all. And then used the whole show, they tried to explain it and poo-haw the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was I really feel it was a test to see if we see something and we react, our body reacts to it and we know it's true, and then they go, oh, no, it's not. Here's all the evidence why it isn't, quote, if we examine the evidence, it really doesn't hold water. I just see that that showed in one image where there's hands sticking to the hull, and I had a reaction in my body like, whoa, this is real. This isn't special effects. And I'm just saying that was the effect of the hull kind of warping and kind of melting and allowing other things to merge through it. Anyway.
Yeah, well, it's changing the nature of matter.
I see. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, this stuff is real.
Right.
This phenomena is real.
Mm-hmm.
John Hutchison replicated the effect. What he did in one of his experiments, okay, running this array of Tesla coils, is that he embedded a piece of wood inside of a block of aluminum.
Ah.
Okay. Something that is impossible. Okay, impossible to do
normal.
In our understanding of metallurgy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
In our understanding of metallurgy, that's impossible.
Now, how did he get the piece of metal?
John has demonstrated that phenomena.
Did he do it where he had them turned it on, and then he pushed the piece of wood into it?
Yes.
Did he do it with his hand, or how did he do it?
He has pictures, and I have pictures of that piece of wood embedded in metal.
Yeah.
On my website.
That's interesting. So it would be wood or arm or any could actually merge molecularly through that because density.
Oh, sure.
Interesting.
Absolutely.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it changes the nature of matter.
Which opens up all kinds of
possibilities. By inducing the scalar currents, you know, this is like a virtual flow of energy.
Right.
Okay, inside metal. Okay, you can cold melt these metals.
Uh-huh.
And by perhaps applying another type of physics, you know, we can build machines, you know, engineer or perhaps grow whatever we want. You know, something like a, you know, the Star Trek teleportation devices.
Well, Ken, is it such that was he able to alter the wave or the field to affect different substances in different ways?
Well, that's something that you would have to ask John. But it affected. It would act as like an eddy current or an eddy flow in these materials.
Uh-huh.
And well, primarily in metallic type materials, you can induce eddy flows.
Now, it had to be metallic, or could it be other things?
You know, I'm not really sure about that.
Because when you said...
I know he tried all sorts of materials.
Oh, I see. Okay. So, but he found that the metal seemed to be most...
Well, with his levitation experiments, you know, where objects would fall up, you know, for example.
Right, go up.
He would place a sample of ice cream, okay, and a little cup.
Yeah.
Okay, and he would start his apparatus up. And the material would just literally, it would literally fall up.
The cup and the ice cream, or just the ice cream?
The ice cream, you would see it. I mean, he took a...
the whole container itself, besides the ice cream, would go up?
Yes.
Okay. Because I didn't know if it was
the ice cream
or...
The ice cream would be like dripping, it would
upward.
Drip up.
Okay? That would be weird. You see it on ice cream stores. We now have new ice cream that is actually anti-gravity ice cream. If it drips up, it doesn't drip on your clothes any longer. Practical applications. that'd be interesting. I was just curious, you know, because with a thing called radionics, psychotronics, you can tune into the frequency of any object, literally, and you can alter. Like in health aspects, you can use radionics to actually affect us in a way that can heal us, or it can actually be used, and I know firsthand what this is like psychotronically, to kill a person. By inducing it in a destructive way. But in a positive way, you can induce a field that would strengthen or enhance, I would think, the properties you would want in that particular thing. I mean, that would, to me, make sense, if you know how to do it. But, interesting. So how long has John Hutchison been doing this?
John has been doing this, I think, since the late 70s.
Has he kept the machine on, or has he ever shut it off?
Well, the technology that he's been working with, he pretty much collected out of, like, scrap, scrap yards.
Right.
And he assembled all this stuff in his apartment. And I have pictures of his apartment on the website. Anyone can visit John. You know, he takes visitors. He's up there in Vancouver, Canada.
I see.
I have to take a trip out there sometime.
Uh-huh.
And check out his place. And he'll run demonstrations. He'll show you anti-gravity. You
right
want to see anti-gravity? Show it to you.
Right before your very eyes.
Absolutely.
Yep. So how big of objects has he, I mean, how big has he actually been able to lift? I mean, what kind of size are we talking about?
He lifted a 90-pound cannonball.
Wow.
Okay, that's on film. You know, he shows that, you know, operating his apparatus, lifting off the table and kind of floating in the air.
So has he ever decided...
It's a 90-pound cannonball.
Wow. So has he thought about building larger, like, objects that can fly around or travel, you know, levitate, like cars or other vehicles?
Well, John really, he's not an engineer.
I see.
You know, John is an experimenter.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm an engineer. You know, I take those ideas and, how can we build a ship out of it?
Right, exactly. That's what, to me, the logical step would be.
I'm a scientific engineering type.
Right, well, to me, that makes logical sense.
But John is an experimenter.
Right.
You know, John is an experimenter. He loves tinkering with his equipment. I know he's experimented with free energy.
Mm-hmm.
And several other different things in his apartment. But John is an experimenter.
Right.
So, and I think to take it to the next level, okay, what we want to do is take this technology to the next level.
Right.
Now need to bring in, okay, an engineering types.
Like yourself.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Okay, to look at this equipment and see what we can do with it.
Right.
You know, in terms of utilizing this technology and in a craft.
Exactly. So, you know? So how far along, Bill, are you, in logical step, into actually utilizing this into a craft?
Well, actually, I've been, for the past couple of years, experimenting with what is called... it's called gyrostatic precession. Okay, this is a different type of technology. You know, it's not really related. Well, John's work relates down to the quantum level.
Uh-huh.
My work works at the macro scale. You know, I'm looking at a different type of technology with perhaps a similar effect in what is called a gyrostatic precession. And what it is, it's a collection of gyroscopes arranged in such a way that there's an effect or a torque effect that's observed that produces a real anti-gravitational force. Okay?
Yes.
And I'm actually putting together a web page that details this.
Hmm. Are you familiar with Otis Carr and his experiments in the 50s?
Oh, yeah.
And because I know the government came down on him. We were about to have a civilian aviation agency rather than a federal, and they really destroyed his reputation, threw him into prison and everything, and he was a student of Tesla. And he always fascinated me because we were so close to having a civilian, had it been for the power elite kind of blocking it. But how far close do you think we are, Bill, and as with Otis Carr's type of work, that we can build an actual anti-gravity vehicle?
I understand, Otis Carr got the idea from Tesla.
Exactly. He was a student of Tesla.
Tesla initially pursued what is called inertial propulsion. I mean, that's what I'm looking into is this inertial propulsion system.
Mm-hmm.
And evidently, Tesla had developed the system.
Right.
Because he had some very interesting descriptions of this technology.
Yeah, in fact, the Nazis, I understand, actually, in McConaughey developed the wireless, but he got involved in these experiments in South America. I hear, according to certain people like Valmar Taninsky, who actually has actual footage, he claims, never seen it, but of the Nazis testing these anti-gravity craft, and the Thrill Society, which was an occult group, got involved in it. And I hear, this is what I hear from, you know, of course, military intelligence is kind of an oxymoron term, but people in military intelligence have said that the unofficial version of the war, when the end of the war came, if the Allies had not got to Berlin when they did, 2 weeks later, the war would have ended entirely different because the Nazis actually developed, and the Foo Fighters that were often observed were actually little anti-gravity devices that they were experimenting with that flew around the B-17s and knocked out their electrical systems, and that in Operation Paperclip, a lot of these guys came over to the United States, and then they built Area 51 and all these places, and that's what I hear, and continued to develop all this secretly without us being able to have access to the civilian level.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a rumor that World War II never ended.
Yeah, that's what I hear, too.
Okay.
They designate war, as the power elite do, for, you know, the so-called shift economically where they'll make money. And so, yeah, the end of the war and that the Fourth Reich continued with Operation Paperclip and anti-gravity and mind control specialists who came over.
Yes.
But Area 51 went in. And then Pine Gap in Australia is the Australian Area 51, I hear, where they test similar
type. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, you pull together all this evidence, little pieces of evidence here and there.
Right.
You know, like the German saucers, the Nazi Bell experiment.
Yep.
Okay, you pull all this stuff together, and you start scratching your chin here.
Then you go to
the experiments.
And, you know,
also these gyrostatic experiments, and I'm looking at proof right in front of me.
Yeah.
I mean, what more do you need?
And do we think then, any logical person who's fairly intelligent, when they start thinking about Now, if the Nazis were involved in this, wouldn't the Allies have, on some level, have utilized it? Wouldn't they have gotten a hold of it and continued on with the experiments? I mean, anybody who scientifically had an interest would definitely investigate and get involved in it and want to further the research, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than saying, okay, it's over, it's done. Yeah, right. It went down the memory sink because first the public, that's what intelligence agents say, but it continued secretly with black appropriated funds to develop technologies, unfortunately not for humanitarian use that we want to use it for, but for military utilization and control, which is the sad thing when it falls in the hands of the wrong group of people rather than the ones who could use it for benevolent reasons of clearing up our environment and energy emancipating us and allowing us to go where we want to go without all the federal bureaucracies controlling that free use of
that's
energy.
That's right.
Yes.
And I think Otis Carr was onto something back
then. Oh, I think so, very much so.
And they put the kibosh on them.
Yes. I mean, you know, I heard that there were 300 investors that were about to went there to see it, and because of, I think they also, the government also zapped him, and with a certain psychotronic technologies, caused the system to break down, malfunction, when it should have. Plus, I hear one of his so-called investors turned out to be, not, they had ties with the government, and sabotaged it. So what we want to look at now is forming communities of people like yourself who are experts in different fields, can come together and can unite together for the sake of humanity, build these vehicles, make us energy emancipated, and be able to travel around without the federal bureaucracy controlling it. With the right group of people, I believe, we can create an infrastructure. That's one of the problems. The infrastructure hasn't been there to support it. But I think we're on the verge, with enough people all over the planet uniting who have, like yourself, this scientific know-how and a passion, like Tesla had, to liberate us in a way. So, if they could put a meter on our breath, I've always said this, they would charge us for the oxygen, which is low on level compared to how it should be. So mm-hmm. I think we're on the verge of actually, in a very pragmatic sense, this has always been my premise, that we will be able to unite and create this kind of these communities that will support and develop the technologies.
And we will.
Yes.
We will. I had a psychic friend of mine back in 1988
uh-huh.
remote view this facility.
Which facility?
And she told me that I would be involved in this.
Oh, I see. Whereabouts did she see it?
It was in a kind of a, she kind of described it as a wooded desert location.
Sounds like kind of Arizona.
Yeah.
Like northern, like a higher elevation of Arizona.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And
yeah.
She described this place as being very, as a lot of people coming. She saw a lot of people coming and going, and she saw the craft, okay, the disc, the saucers that we will be constructing at this facility.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just astonished, okay, what she saw. And her third eye... She was shown a vision of this facility, and I was just dumbfounded because I asked her, back in 77, I was shown a vision of my future, and in my vision I'm working on this disc craft,
right?
Okay, and I'm working on some electrical part of it inside the craft. And in this vision, I have some visitors coming from college. Some of my college friends were coming over for a visit to look at the craft.
Right.
And they were just astonished what they saw.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, I was just blown away by it, being a college youngster, and seeing a vision of my future. I was just completely blown away. When I saw this, completely blown away. But it was a disc. 30, 40 feet in diameter. It was pretty good size craft.
Uh-huh.
And being of the college age, I didn't have a clue how this thing worked. But I knew what I was working on was going to work.
Right.
That's what was so odd about it.
Uh-huh.
But then many years later, I started talking to this friend of mine, this psychic friend of mine back in 88. Okay, this is 10 years later, back
right.
in 1988. And I said, I seem to be, you know, at this facility. And then she went into her remote viewing mode.
Right.
You know, that she typically went into. And she saw it. Okay.
Right.
And she was just astonished, you know, what she was looking at. She saw multiple discs. We're going to construct at this place.
Exactly.
And you know, we're going to build this. And she saw a lot of people coming and going. So it was almost like a visitor center. Okay, of these amazing technologies, you know, these exotic technologies.
Right.
You know, she kind of described it as a facility. And it's just an amazing place, you know, as she described it. And I would be involved with it, and some of the people that I know will also be involved, you know, in this program.
Right. Well, to me, and of course, you know, everybody has their perceptions, and you have yours, and I have mine. And I just want to say that I know that, you know, some people aren't as open to the reality. I myself, having had, I mean, I just share this physical contact with very human-appearing Elohim, angelic-type entities who have saved my life actually a number of times. And I mentioned earlier about the psychotronic thing. Government has actually tried to off me a few times, and I'm still here. Because they knew that one of my missions was to help unite people together to build, you know, the communities and the places that people on a very pragmatic level would come together and with their technologies. But it's my perception that we will also have, having had experiences where my life has been saved, outside help to help the Earth scientists develop and build. You know, those higher forces believe, I always have said, God helps those that help themselves. I mean, very much into, you know, looking at responsibilities and from a pragmatic sense, but it's also nice to have some outside help, you know, like I see cosmic backup team to help us utilize what we do have and transform the planet into the ultimate, you know, potential that it has and eliminate all the pollution and all the destruction that has been going on for ages. That's unnecessary.
Yes.
And with Tesla's technology and others having been suppressed too long, this has been going on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's wonderful technology and ideas that have been available for ages. It's just there's a few powerful people who've always wanted to hog it for themselves, for not and definitely for not the best reasons. And so, you know, to me, I've seen these communities. I've seen them also as bubble cities, meaning that we have the basic Earth structures that built. We will build them. But surrounding them, I've seen these. They look like rainbow cities because they're surrounded by a force field. And the force field that I have perceived, and this was told to me more and more from one more than one source, was a field. It's like the ultimate security system. You know, it's not like an old key and a lock. This is a system. Even the government military has utilized it a little bit, where if you walk up to the field and your energy, your basic essence of who you are based on the sense of intent, you know, intent is nine-tenths of the law, and your intent is in harmony to that community, into the reverence of life, into the sacred principles of life that is user-friendly, and you have positive reasons to be there, you walk through the field. But if your intent is to, say, sabotage it, to infiltrate it, to use it, to covertly go there for some destructive reason, you come up the wall and it's a solid wall. You cannot enter the field because your own essence is contradictory to the very frequencies that the community is, you know, created for. It's for humanitarian purposes. And they've shown me this field, and it's a very simple field. It has to do with similar to some of the things you are talking about, adjusting in such a way so that someone who's in harmony to the field, you can merge through it. You feel kind of a tingling sensation when you go through it. It's actually very cleansing and soothing. But for somebody with negative intent, walk up to the wall, and they cannot penetrate it because their field is not in harmony to it.
Fascinating. Fascinating.
In fact, some of the ancient cities that exist around the planet. Now, there's also holographic technology. In fact, I hear many years ago, National Geographic, in one of the volcanoes, accidentally tripped one of these warning systems, and they freaked out because at least they viewed what they saw were gigantic snails and creatures. And I hear that it was just a holographic image to freak everybody, keep everybody away from this sacred place. That was one form of it. And then the other field would only activate the portal when the right guardian or person who originally was connected with, and say in another lifetime, comes back to be a part of it. No, and even other forces can't enter it until that person whose energy is associated in harmony to that frequency would activate. It's like the ultimate security system, again, only allows it to be activated when the right person's there.
Well, Michael, I can see how that can be done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perhaps you have heard of a Tesla shield?
Yes.
Okay, Tom Bearden describes a Tesla shield as, let's say we have these, what he uses the terminology of a scalar field.
Yes.
Okay, you beam the scalar field, let's say in the shape of a dome, okay?
Right.
Now, the scalar field effect, when you have these interference zones set up with multiple waves, you know, coming from these different scalar field emitters, okay,
right.
The interference zone will manifest an EM effect, okay, an electromagnetic effect.
Right.
Creating a field at a distance. And perhaps the beat frequencies or the fundamental frequencies of this created EM field, okay, maybe resonates with something related to the brain of a person that, you know, the harmonious frequencies emitted by somebody, maybe it's in tune with this resonance of the EM field.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And with somebody maybe thinking negative thoughts, you're going to emit a different frequency.
Right.
And it'll interact differently with this resonating EM field that somebody emitting positive thoughts would just pass through it.
Exactly. Well, that would, to me, it's in harmony. It's in harmony to the basic essence of what that city or that community would be based
on.
Right. So this is the thing that when communities that were tried, people like Tesla and others, and of course, there wasn't there. You know, people didn't know how to link with one another in earlier times, but it had always been my concern, but just awareness that in order for these communities that would allow us to develop this kind of technology for the best reasons, unlike throwing it away in some secret military base somewhere for the worst reasons, that in order to protect these cities, these communities, we'd have to have a field that would, you know, we have to look at it from a very pragmatic point of view, to protect this for the best reasons and not to have the vulnerabilities of infiltration, and this would be the ultimate way to do it, is that the field would only allow somebody in it who is in harmony to that whole purpose for the community. And this would definitely weed out infiltration of any kind. We didn't have to worry about it. We just set the field up, and we could, you know, even in design it. I mean, there are certain fields that can be created to be of that frequency, and there's no and it would be such a freaking, and I think that even a missile would bounce off, if the field is such, I don't care whether it be a person trying to enter the field for negative reasons, or a missile fire, it would bounce off the field, yet somebody can walk right through the field with no problem, again, when they're in harmony to that frequency, is my perception.
Yeah, well, that's the whole idea behind, that's Tom Bearden's explanation of a Tesla shield.
I see. Mm-hmm.
So it's a force field.
And, you know, Tesla, he wanted to...
force field at a distance using this scalar wave emitters.
Mm-hmm. Now, Tesla wanted to robots fight our wars. Say, why send people out to fight the wars? Let's have robots fight the wars. Well, so then war would cease to be, because what's the use of war? Anyway.
Well, there's an agenda to destroy the planet.
Right, well, by the power lead, yes. Mm-hmm. But our agenda is to not only salvage the Earth, but to transform it and make it into the paradise world it was supposed to. Well, I think it was at one time and will now very soon be again if we use the technologies in a harmonious way. I think I'm very excited about what I see coming up.
Oh,
people like yourself being involved.
Very optimistic, Michael, about the future.
Oh, I am too.
Very optimistic.
And so it's very fascinating. There's so many things we could talk about the technology, you know, the things that Tesla did. And it's just so unfortunate that, but he was kind of born out of time. And it's, I mean, he was way, you know, I hear interesting things about Tesla, how he actually, you know, from the time he was born, there were certain anomalies about his birth. There's a book called Spaceship X-12, I believe is authentic, describes him. I don't know what you think about it, but I believe that his soul was not from this planet. I think he came on a mission to uplift it. And I think his mission was kind of cut short from what he intended to do. I think sometimes very enlightened souls, very highly advanced souls like himself, that was both very right and left brain. I mean, he would think his invention in his brain, he wouldn't have to come up with prototypes, and then he'd build what he saw in his brain. And he had some very powerful spiritual abilities that there's, you know, if you've ever seen the movie The Secret Life of Nikola Tesla, you know, if you ever seen that movie?
No, I haven't.
That was blacked out by the Motion Picture Guild. Orson Welles, who plays J.P. Morgan in the movie, When he tried to get the movie into the United States, the Motion Picture Guild blocked that film being shown. Now, I got one of the pirated copies when it came in, but,
Really?
He discovered that, of course, the head of the Motion Picture Guild, had links with whoever, but it was a great movie because it describes, as he was growing up, he had very unique qualities, and he was a little naive about who J.P. Morgan was, and, of course, Thomas Edison said, if I had my way, I'd outlaw.
And that movie is called again?
The Secret Life of Nikola Tesla. It was built. Uh-huh. It was made, produced by the Yugoslavian government, and they actually, a couple well-known American actors, along with Orson Welles, who played J.P. Morgan in the movie, and it really was well done. It was made in the 1960s, and the guy who played Tesla he looked just like him, a great Yugoslavian actor, and of course, it wasn't Yugoslavia in those days. It later became Yugoslavia, but Tesla's a national hero over there. Mm-hmm. Most people don't even know that about him. He was one of the most famous people in their entire history for what he did, and only now are people beginning to really
read the groundwork. Tesla laid the groundwork for the future.
Exactly.
So, and his technologies are just, to me, people have taken his technologies, and I think they just misused them.
Oh, totally. Yeah,
don't understand it.
Uh-huh.
They don't understand it. They misuse it, and they just don't understand the man.
Right. Well, I think we are on the verge of one of the most dramatic shifts. What I see going on around the planet right now, and I'm very attuned to energies, and there is an energy frequency shift that I perceive happening that has never happened in human history right now. And I think that with the ends of certain cycles coming to a close, the momentum, the alpha and the omega kind of point of shift with people's need and the people's desire to find positive solutions technologically that will benefit and mutually help us all is a most powerful time than any other time. And I think it's no accident some of us are here on this planet to make sure, as a guardian to that process, that the technologies will now come forth and be really available to those whose hearts are pure, is the way I would define it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not going to be any limitation. I think we're going to see doors open that have been very much blocked. And I think people like yourself, who I believe is your mission to really technologically transform the planet, is going to have plenty of opportunities. And I think I also feel that while so much of the money that has been used in destructive ways, I think there are not too many, but I think there's a few power elite ones. I have a theory that if spiritual integrity breaks down, mechanical integrity will break down. In other words, if we are not in harmony and integrity to the forces of life, we will literally implode we will cease to be. We will not be able to operate and function in the way the energy is flowing. So there are a few powerful souls, I say power in a very negative way, who are starting to realize this fact, that if they don't turn around and use their power in a benevolent way, they will cease to actually exist very much longer. It's put the kind of fear of God into them, like, oh, my God, I better get hip with the program, or I'm going to literally cease to be recycled to the God out. I won't exist any longer because the universe will not stand for disharmony, mm-hmm. dysfunctional, lack of integrity operation. So I perceive that there's going to be, not too many, but a few forces coming forth to, instead of using to suppress and manipulate and destroy, use their power now because they're forced to. And that's kind of begrudging how some people are forced to, or they cease to be. We'll use it to help back and fund things, but previously having suppressed and manipulated and everything negative. Now, here's their chance to balance out their karma, so to speak, and use it in a benevolent way. At least I hope that there are a few instances that will come forth. Hopefully, I try to be optimistic, though I try to be realistic about having seen how the world has been up to now, but I think we're in for some interesting times.
Yes. It's coming, and it's coming soon.
Very soon. To a neighborhood near you. And I think that this community that she, remote viewed was only one of thousands that are going to pop up all over the planet here shortly. I really think that
yes.
we are going to see a 100th monkey effect, as the theory is that one monkey washing his food, and suddenly, with no form of normal communication, popped up. Another monkey was washing its food. That's what the story is about, that we're going to see communities popping up. Like I always call it the popcorn effect, meaning that when heat hits a certain thing, causes the kernel of truth to pop open and explode into the world and become available. And you can't stop that transformation, because it was in God's timing. It's God's will that ultimately at some the golden age will manifest, because there's enough people and enough energy available and technology also. And when it all aligns, you have that perfect combination, then it's it's like a domino effect in a positive way. There's no stopping it. It's happening, and you can't stop. It's like a chain reaction.
Yes.
Like a nuclear explosion in a positive way. How I would define it.
Interesting times ahead.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun.
So fasten your seatbelt.
It's going to be fun.
It is. Well, that's the important thing. It's got to be joyous. It's got to be easily, effortlessly, and powerfully, joyously. That's a good mantra. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bill, as we come to the close very soon here at the end of this program, and boy, time just flies. I do want to also, the program is over, I wanted to get to, let other people know, and as we have, like Al, Bill, you're going to be, of course, helping to host this show a lot, and which I really appreciate us connecting with you here on the Vortex Network. And I want to invite everybody, not only listening to the Progressive Technology Hour, that this show we air every Saturday, but also before this show comes on, we have Aurora Light's Healthy Habits Hour, where she discusses all kinds of, sometimes I'm on the show with her too, discussing healthy things to, because if, let's face it, if we aren't body, mind, spirit, emotional integration, where we have a healthy body, a clear mind, then how can we possibly fulfill and develop the technologies that we need to bring to the planet? It's a very pragmatic, responsibility. And, of course, I come on at right after this show coming up in the Cosmic Connection. I am your Cosmic Connection, and I discuss all kinds of things, both cosmic as well as how it may impact the planet. And we can't separate one thing from something else. It's all going on. Reality is made up, I always say, like giant gears. You turn one here, you turn one over there, and you affect the field. Everything is interacting in some form. So it's all part of the reality, the trilogy of reality that we need to be aware of. And I really invite the people to go to my website also, channelforthemasters.com, where I discuss all kinds of cosmic things and higher beings who has intervened in my life and have helped the planet quite a bit. And the one thing about higher forces, they don't like to cram help down our throats. They respect free will. But at the same time, it's their perception that free will has gotten out of hand in a negative way, and they feel that they must step in and help those who are, like Bill and others, who are technologically open to receive help and guidance so we can build these communities that we've been talking about and develop the technology and expand it and encompass the world with communities and technology that is user-friendly, that is enhancing rather than destructive. I think the time has come and to really be open to this thing that we are now experiencing at this time. I think this is an evolutionary, revolutionary shift like no other. One of the few times on planet Earth that we've seen such a massive shift occur. So we have all kinds of information here on the Vortex Network. And again, we're coming up to the end of the hour now. So I want to thank you, Bill, for being here today.
Thank you, Michael. It's a great opportunity.
Yes.
And we're going to pursue these technologies further here, I think, at future shows.
Definitely. We have a lot of time, opportunities to do this, to get the public help, and have a number of guests as we will be having. We'll be have a chance for you to interview them and for us to discuss this. So I want to thank all of you who have listened to the program today. Stay attuned. Let your friends know about it. We appreciate your support. Any emails, email vortexnetwork@hotmail.com. And that's where you can also email, and any suggestions you have for future guests, we are truly open to that. So thank you.
Company presents the 2007 U.S. Empowerment Tour Competition, exclusive for U.S. citizens. Three fortunate Americans will win an all-expenses-paid trip to central London for a very special personal self-empowerment event. How? By downloading two brand new, one-of-a-kind self-empowerment products only available from Naaman. The first of its kind multi-reading numerology program that features insight, guidance, and prediction, and the relationship transformer that guides you to transform and attract desired relationships. For more information, please go to www.neemenn.com. Real personal self-empowerment practitioners for a real personal self-empowerment tour.
Does that help?
It definitely has. I'm feeling lighter for sure.
Okay.
I don't have the knots there that were there.
Okay.
And I'm not feeling as nervous about things.
Hi, everybody. This is Bill at Achieve Radio, and I'm here to tell you about a new show here on Achieve Radio, The Freedom Show with Diane Lanthier, broadcasting live every Sunday evening.
How does that feel?
Feels good.
Yeah?
Yeah, it does. It's draining now. I guess you're good, Diane.
Thanks, Diane. At first, when I was saying it, when we first started, my legs were like heavy.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then now they like.
What more can I say? Diane Lanthier, Sunday nights, right here on AchieveRadio.com.
I feel good now. 1,000 angels by your side.